Good morning, and welcome to our second mini-shiur on Megillas Esther, the Book of Esther. We are learning in the merit of the IDF, Israel's emergency services, the hostages, and the injured. And yesterday we introduced Megillas Esther by looking at the first parak, the first chapter, and its emphasis on Ahasuerus' parties, something that really seems superfluous in terms of the story as a whole. And we asked, so why is it there? And we suggested that it's there to frame Ahasuerus' personality. It introduces us to Ahasuerus as somebody who's extremely insecure, extremely worried about power, and he's scheming to find ways to strengthen his power and to hold on to what he has. Today I want to look at it from a different perspective. Professor Yoram Hazoni, in his book The Dawn, right at the beginning, makes two interesting points. Point number one is that this book may be read as, book meaning Megillas Esther, may be read as the last book in Tanakh. It's certainly hand in hand with Ezra and Nehemiah. Meaning Divrei Hayamim, which if you were to open up our editions of Tanakh, is the last book that's found in Tanakh, ends when the Jews come back to Israel, when the Persians defeat the Babylonians, and Koresh, Cyrus the Great, says, okay, you can go home now. However, after that, you have Ezra, Nehemiah telling the story of the first generation or two that's back in Israel. And you have Megillas Esther, which takes place when Jews are already back in Israel. How far along we are in building up the land and the Beis HaMikdash is not clear. King Ahasuerus, there is an Ahasuerus who is mentioned in Sefer Ezra. Unclear whether that's the same Ahasuerus or a different Ahasuerus. But however you slice it, he's definitely after King Cyrus. He's definitely after Koresh. So you're some period of time into Jewish life in Israel. If you take a look at Ramban in the beginning of Maseches Megillah, he has a little bit of a discussion of this. It's very clear we are at the end of Tanakh, though. You could argue that maybe the book of Malachi is also taking place at this time. However you slice it, this is a period of time when we're at the end of Tanakh. That's number one. And number two, it is a book about life in exile, meaning the Jews who are in this story, the Jews who feature in this story, are not the ones who went back to Israel. They're the ones who are sitting in Golos. They're sitting in exile. And as Hazoni writes, I'm quoting him now, unlike most of the other writings in the Bible which depict the Jews in their efforts to come to the land of Israel and build a Jewish nation there, Esther describes a world in which the Jews are distant from their land, their tradition, and their God. Even though we find that they get close to Hashem in this story, but fundamentally, and we'll see more of this in a moment, the Jews here are Golos Jews. These are Jews who are not living in Israel. There is an opportunity, and they've, for whatever reason, remained in exile. And to me, that's a second reason why Megillas Esther is going to include such a focus on the parties of Ahasuerus, reading those parties as related to the Jewish experience in exile in multiple ways. So let's unpack that, and I'll explain what I mean. First of all, the Gemara in Megillah Yud Aleph Amud Beis picks up on something that I noted yesterday. We read the beginning of Megillas Esther, and we saw that it said, in the days of Ahasuerus, who reigns from Hodu to Cush and so on, in the third year of his reign, he made a party. So why is this party taking place in year three? Why is this party not taking place in year one? Right? Isn't that when you make your party, you come in and you have a big coronation, an inauguration, a celebration? Why is this in year three? So you could, on a very practical level, say, because it takes time to make up the guest list. That's a fair point. However, the Gemara reads it differently. Gemara Megillah Daf Yud Aleph Amud Beis suggests that it notes the way that that Megillah frames it. It says, Bayamim Haheim, in those days, Kisheves Hamelach Ahasuerus al Kisei Malchuso, when King Ahasuerus was sitting on his throne. But it's year three. Why is this when he is sitting on his throne? So that's a key point. And their answer is that Kisheves can be read not as when he sat on his throne, but when his mind was settled on his throne. Why would his mind only be settled when he hit year three? And the Gemara's answer is that that's when he thought that the Jews were defeated and the Jews would remain in exile, and that set his mind at ease. What are we talking about? How does that fit? How do you know that Ahasuerus was worried at all about the Jews potentially being out of his kingdom and so on? So part of this goes back to a predecessor of his, King Belshazzar. Belshazzar was the Babylonian king who was defeated by Cyrus. And at the very end of his reign, right before the Persians destroyed him, when the Persians and Babylonians are already at war, Belshazzar makes a party. And the story is told in Daniel Perek He, chapter 5. He makes a big party for all of his leaders. This is during the war, when they're already in trouble. Perhaps he's trying to boost morale. However, if you were to look in Daniel chapter 5, you would find that Belshazzar actually brought out the vessels of the Beis Hamikdash at this party, which is such an odd thing to do. If this is a party that's, you know, going on during a war, like, why are you bringing out the vessels of the Beis Hamikdash? And so the Gemara in Megillah Yud Aleph Amud Beis suggests that what Belshazzar was doing was he used these to say, look, we are victorious over the Jews. The Jews have a prophecy that they'll be in exile for 70 years and then they're going to go home. 70 years have elapsed. They have not gone home. The 70-year prophecy is found in the Navi Yirmiyahu. So Belshazzar is apparently aware of this, and Belshazzar says that it's 70 years and the Jews have not come home. Look, we have defeated the Jews. Now, the Gemara says Belshazzar made a mistake in his calculations. I'm not going to go into all of the ins and outs of what the calculation was and what the calculation should have been, but as the Gemara reads it, Ahasuerus, who in many ways resembles Belshazzar, some of which we may talk about, Ahasuerus has a lot in common with Belshazzar. So we say, oh, Ahasuerus was doing the same thing. He thought that he had made the calculation and the Jews are not going back to their land. Whatever it was that had started under Cyrus is going to be cut short. And that was why he was celebrating, and that's why he did it in year 3, because that's when his math worked out to say that the Jews have reached the end of their 70 years in power. That's that's what the party is about. The party is celebrating the demise of the Jews. There's actually more in the Medrash on this, so that the Medrash in Esther Rabbah talks about this throne that Ahasuerus sets up. He's sitting on his throne only in year 3. What happened? Why is he only sitting on the throne in year 3? They have this whole idea that his throne is modeled on the throne of Shlomo HaMelech, which is described in Sefer Melachim as this very grand throne. So Ahasuerus modeled his throne on that of Shlomo. Interesting. We could spend some time on that, but I'm not going to. Instead, I'm going to point out another Gemara in Megillah, Yud Beis Amud Aleph, 12a, which says that when the Megillah says that Ahasuerus wanted to show everybody, Ve'es Yikar Tiferes Gedulaso, he wants to show everybody the glory of Tiferet, the splendor of his greatness. Gemara says, aha, we know that word Tiferet. The clothing of the Kohanim is described in the Chumash, in Parshas Truma, both the clothing of the Kohen Gadol and the clothing of the regular Kohanim, as lichavod ulitiferet, ulisiferes, it's for splendor, suggests the Gemara, Ahasuerus is actually wearing the garments of the Kohanim. The Medrash here is trying to answer a textual problem. Why did you bother with Yikar Tiferes Gedulaso once you already said he's displaying Osher Kavod Malchuso? You already said he's displaying his wealth and his honor. What did you add with this? The answer is the word Tiferet. It's the clothing of the clothing of the Kohanim. It also fits with the idea of bringing out the vessels of the Beis HaMikdash. We're going to come back to that in just a moment. But this is another way to show that the parties are about, in fact, the Jews being in exile. Look at that. They're celebrating the demise of the Jews, and the king is wearing the clothing of the Kohanim. And then the big one, the one that I think is most familiar to people, the Megillah says that Achashverosh serves his guests v'chelim mikelim shonim, with vessels from different kinds of vessels. And the person who lanes Megillah, according to many minhagim, will lane these words with the trop of Eicha instead of Esther. V'chelim mikelim shonim, vessels of the Beis HaMikdash. How do you know that this refers to vessels of the Beis HaMikdash? All it says is kelim mikelim shonim, which literally means vessels of different kinds of vessels. How does that tell me that it's the vessels of the Beis HaMikdash? So I think what triggers this medrash is that it's just very strange. It says v'hashkos b'chlei zahav. He gave everybody to drink from gold vessels. And then it says v'chelim mikelim shonim, and vessels of different kinds. It sounds like mismatched vessels, right? Why would you serve your guests? You want to show them your grandeur. Why are you bringing out, like, I don't have enough in my set, so I need to combine different sets in order to serve them? What do you mean, different vessels? It's very, very strange. And in fact, the commentators bring a range of views to explain what you mean when you say different vessels. So Rashi says he brought out a wide variety of options for people to use. You could have this kind of vessel, you could have that kind of vessel. Malbim says, no, what he's saying is it's a full set of vessels in one. That when it says kelim shonim, it doesn't mean mismatched, but rather each person has a full set of vessels, you know, for themselves. So you had your set, and I had my set, and the next person had their set, and it was all different. There's a medrash found in the Sifri de Agadata on Esther. People drank from a different cup each time. You drank from a cup, and the waiter came and took it away, and then you got another cup, and the waiter came and took it away. I've seen that happen. So that's another explanation. There are multiple approaches, but then you get the Midrashim, which say no. These are different vessels. It says the Gemara there are actually multiple ways to read different vessels to mean the vessels of the Beis HaMikdash. One is the Medrash in Esther Rabbah, which says that people's faces changed in shame before the beauty of these vessels. They were mishtanim. That's one. You have another Medrash in the Psikta Zutrata, which says that shonim means the vessels taken by those who deviate from the norm, those who are corrupt. And then you have, finally, the Gemara in Megillah Yud Beis Amud Aleph, which says the kelim shonim means repeated vessels. Belshazzar brought out the vessels to drink from at his party, and now Achashverosh is doing it again. He's repeating what Belshazzar did. So what we're saying here, and I realize I'm rushing it a little bit, I hope it's still clear, is in addition to the Medrash that's saying that these parties are to celebrate the exile of the Jews, and in addition to the Medrash that says that the clothing that he wears with Tiferet is the clothing of the Kohen, the vessels he's using are the vessels of the Beis HaMikdash, like what Belshazzar did, as described in Daniel Perek Hey. So part of what we're doing here is linking Achashverosh and Belshazzar. Belshazzar did this, Achashverosh does it too. There's a lot to be said about that, maybe another time. Part of it is also just to say, look at the degradation of the Jews and of God that's going on at this meal. And it's also meant to be a statement, as the Gemara Megillah goes on to say, that the Jews ate at this party. The Jews participate in the party of Achashverosh. This is what it means to be a Jew in exile. They're celebrating the fact that they conquered you and you're eating at the party. That's a piece of this. So that's another way to look at the Megillah emphasizing the parties of Achashverosh. Part of it to teach us about his personality, and part of it to teach us about the Jews' situation living in exile in Shushan, participating in parties that celebrate the fact that the Persians have control over us. There's much more that could be said, but I think I'm going to stop here for today.